All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
This is William.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, listeners, excited to bring you a very special episode of the London is Blue podcast. We've got a special one in the sense of Nick and Dan are here, which you're lucky to have. But gentlemen, if you remember back on a mild London night in the 22nd of September, Chelsea had just lost to Liverpool 2-1. Respectfully, though, it was a respectable performance. There we were on the pitch side at Stamford Bridge, going to go talk to Premier League TV. And as we walk by, none other than the NBC sports desk is there. You hear a very familiar voice, the official voice of soccer in America. It was Arlo White, Graham Lasso, Lee Dixon, everyone at the table. We ended up catching eyes with Arlo, greeted him, and fast forward, Arlo, you are on the show. We are so excited to have you. Welcome to the London is Blue podcast.
It's my pleasure, guys. I'm just delighted that you survived Oktoberfest, which I think you were, from memory, you were flying out to the following day. So you survived Oktoberfest and you've lived to tell the tale, which is awesome.
By the skin of our teeth, really. not by much more than that. It was nice that you were able to give us some friendly tips on our way out. And perhaps those are the things that helped us make it through.
Dan, it was a fun time. We even got a photo pitch side with everyone there. But look at this. We roll in from that. We exchange, you know, information right away. Arlo was so generous with his time. What else do we have going for everyone today? It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, we've got plenty of conversation around commentary. So what Arlo does for a living, and not an easy job by any means. So want to get a little bit of details from him and then also spend some time getting his thoughts on Chelsea as well. But yeah, for those who don't know, obviously Arlo, lead play-by-play announcer for NBC's Premier League coverage from the 2013-14 season forward. And then some might recognize him as the voice of the Seattle Sounders, my hometown. And yeah, so that's a very kind of cool connection there as well.
Right. So right away, Arlo, we have a message or a question from Chase. He says, what was the biggest adjustment that you had to make when you came from announcing MLS in the United States, now moving to the Premier League over in England?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think I had to adjust it too much at all, because the mantra, both in the with the Seattle Sounders, which was an amazing couple of seasons. I wish it could have been longer, to be honest with you. But the opportunity came up to go to NBC and to front the coverage for Major League Soccer nationally and also experience the Olympic Games. But the mantra from both organizations was be authentic. And, you know, that's what I've always tried to be. You know, there might be a few words that you can throw in, like locker room instead of changing room, that sort of thing. But by and large, they wanted me to broadcast the game of football in the way that I'd done at home. So when it came to coming to the Premier League, that didn't really change too much. One of the aspects that I really enjoyed about working for Major League Soccer, working in Major League Soccer for NBC and the Sounders, was that we had these amazing production meetings with players and coaches. So coaches, you know, incredibly, would give us the starting 11s the day before a game, which just wouldn't happen in Europe. It certainly doesn't happen in the Premier League. But we get to pick the coaches' brains about what they were going to try and do the next day. They trusted us with that information. We were true to that. And we got some great info that I was able then to feed into the broadcast. Now, of course, we don't get that sort of access in the Premier League. Starting 11s are kept under wraps until an hour before. We sometimes get a few steers here and there. But I've taken that method and that style into Premier League was by just reading transcripts of the press conferences or picking up some useful quotes from managers and players throughout the week, because I'd rather the protagonists in the game tell the story, or certainly tell the story through their words and attitudes, than to try and editorialize myself. And it's something I picked up in Major League Soccer, and it served me well in the Premier League.
So when you kind of think about that match preparation that you're just talking about, you know, you shared some wonderful photos of the match boards you do. And I think our kind of thought is wondering just how much preparation or behind the scenes goes into getting ready for each individual match that you call.
I'd say ideally between 8 and 10 hours per game. But the thing is, you can do as little or as much preparation for a game as you want. Some commentators like to go in with very little by way of statistics and storylines. I don't feel that way. And I don't want a call at the same time just to be a shopping list of stats and appearances and goals and assists and that sort of thing. So you have to have a happy medium. What I prepare for is the world's worst nil-nil draw. And I've got a little bit of stuff on the match board that might try and liven it up a little bit. If it's a 3-2, if it's a 3-3, if it's a cracking game, then there's no need to use, you know, more than 10 or 15% of what's on the match board. But also, each team has a possible 25 players that could score the winning goal on any given match. So you've got to know about each individual player. And obviously, the stats and the storylines from each individual player changes each week. So you're looking at doing 2 games every weekend. That's upwards of 100 players. You know, I put the match boards out on Instagram and Twitter. I have this sticker system that I'm a slave to. I should be getting massive sponsorship from Avery Labels and Stabilo Highlighters. I mean, I can't get enough of them on my Instagram feed, and I've had nothing from them whatsoever. But that's the system I use. Every commentator has a different system. We're all quite nerdy at heart, and we all love what we do, but we want to be prepared. And again, it's about telling the story authentically rather than being vague and generalizing. I'd rather be specific and accurate. So that's what drives me on. I'm in a cafe here in the East Midlands of England, doing my stickers, updating my information for Norwich City against Liverpool on Saturday, and I can't wait. And the research is part of the process. And that's what I enjoy the most. But I am relieved, I must say, when that process ends and I get to sit on the gantry, put the microphone to my mouth and actually do my day job. During the week, it's more like a data input job. So I actually love the broadcasting aspect. But without that work during the week, I don't think the calls are as effective.
Who has been the most difficult name to pronounce for you?
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's a really good question. Who do I always have problems with? Funnily enough, Dejan Lovren. I keep calling him Dejan, and I get in my ears. I get in my ear, friendly reminder, Arlo, it's Dejan. And then on the conference call, Arlo, remember this weekend, it's Dejan, and you can guarantee the first time he kicks the ball or heads the ball, I'll say Dejan. So it's just a mental block. I'm working on it. I'm walking around the kitchen for the next couple of days saying Dejan. So hopefully I'll get it right on Saturday.
Well, another one from our listener, Chad, he was so thrilled that we get to talk to you. And he says, you are superb at your job. I never feel like there is an ounce of bias in your commentary. This is a rare feat in your business these days. Not even your color guys are completely immune. How do you do it?
Well, I saw Chad's tweet and I appreciate the sentiments very much indeed. I think football commentators often get a bad rap. We are describing some what could be the greatest moments of your team in the Premier League or other competitions. But we're also describing if you go through a bad run of form or a bad season or bad experiences. And I think our voices sort of get associated with various eras of teams. So, for example, Arsenal have been in decline pretty steadily since we took the rights, and for some reason there's a pocket of Arsenal fans who think I hate Arsenal, and it couldn't be further from the truth. I'm neutral. I'm completely neutral when it comes to Arsenal. I respect the institution, you know. I respect the institution of Chelsea, of Liverpool, of Manchester United, because I don't support any of the big teams. I can look at them objectively. And having worked for the BBC for 10 years and NBC for what now? Eight or nine years, I think it is. Objectivity is drilled into us. And I think one of the best aspects or what I'm most proud of in my career is Leicester City, my team, you know, my city winning the Premier League title and not one person accusing me of being biased during the games and during that run. Now, did I get excited? Of course I did, because it was such an incredible story. But I was telling it from both sides, from, you know, both teams' perspective on any given day. And when you do this for a job, when you are professional at it, you are objective when you pick up a microphone. You're not there as a fan. You're not wearing a scarf. You're not thinking as a supporter. You're thinking as a broadcaster and how to tell the tale of the game evenly between both teams. Now, if one team happens to be dominating the game and wins 5-0, of course you're going to be full of superlatives for that team, and maybe a few negatives come out about the team that's getting shellacked on that given day. It doesn't mean you don't like them. It just means they played really badly. It's nice that Chad feels that I'm neutral and not biased. I don't think as many commentators are as biased as people think. It's just that people view broadcasts through the prism of their own team. And if they hear things they don't like, sometimes they assume it's because the commentator doesn't like them, when in reality, the commentator, I think, is just doing his job or her job.
So if you think about one event that you haven't had a chance to call yet, you've obviously been involved in World Cup type of production. You've had a chance to be involved heavily within the Premier League and MLS.
I would say a World Cup final would be absolutely pinnacle, I think. It's unfortunate that, you know, NBC are out of the mix for World Cups for the foreseeable future. You know, I think it looks like Fox have them tied up, and they do a great job, so good for them. But I think, you know, like just like players and coaches and anyone, and even fans, I mean, to be there at a World Cup final to convey it to an American audience, I think would be the pinnacle at some point. You know, I'm still relatively young in broadcasting terms, so who knows? You know, one day that may come to pass. I've commentated on World Cups in stadiums for BBC Radio and thoroughly enjoyed it. So hopefully one day I'll get to do the big showpiece, and ideally it would be for an American audience. That'd be awesome. A career highlight. By the way, when you've called Leicester to the Premier League title, that's hard to top.
Fair enough.
One of the questions we have, Arlo, is, you know, we're thinking about, you know, you're an inspiration to us as our own little mini broadcast team on the podcast, but who are you learning from? Who are your role models? You know, who helped you along your journey to improve your craft over the years?
Well, generally, I suppose it would be British commentators. When I was growing up, there's a guy called Barry Davis, who's in his late 70s now. He's retired. I met him a number of times. An inspirational guy, such a lovely, erudite, intelligent, gentle man who, in every sense of the word, who was good at different sports. I mean, he was hugely prominent as a soccer commentator on the BBC in the 70s, well, 60s, 70s and 80s. He alternated with John Motson doing FA Cup finals and World Cup finals. But he also was equally adept at tennis. He was a big voice during the Olympic Games. And having worked with him, sometimes they say don't meet your heroes, but I just wasn't disappointed. He was wonderful. And you could ask him anything and he advised. And he actually said he'd listened to some of my stuff and really rated me as a broadcaster, which meant the absolute world to me. So Barry Davis is one guy. You know, Martin Tyler, who is the doyen, still going strong for Sky Sports and Premier League production. So I think he does the Monday night games over on NBCSN. So he is just wonderful to talk to and to pick his brains and his vast knowledge of the game every weekend. And again, he's just in a press room. He's just delighted and happy to sit and talk football and broadcasting. So he's absolutely fantastic. In terms of American announcers, I've got a lot of time for Joe Buck, but I also, my hero in terms of American broadcasting is Al Michaels. Sunday Night Football, he and Chris Collingsworth and Michelle Tafoya, I think are the best trio in sports broadcasting, not just in America, but in the world. I just think they are absolutely outstanding. Al's voice is synonymous to me with the NFL, with sports broadcasting. He's amazing. And it'll be a sad day when he retires. So hopefully that won't be for a long time yet. Again, I met him. He was wonderful. And once told me in the booth at the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, ahead of a Sunday Night Football broadcast, that he'd once commentated on a semi-final and a final of British Rugby League for ABC's Wide World of Sports. And I couldn't believe it. And I still haven't found, I don't know whether any of your listeners might have a copy of it, but I would love to hear Al Michaels in the 1980s commentating on Rugby League. So if there's a copy of it out there, please let us know.
That would be an interesting journey, but they are crushing it. You've definitely picked some big hitters, which is amazing. And talking about NBC Family, you know, us as a podcast, we've given the network an immense amount of credit for really taking the coverage of the Premier League to a new level that I don't think any of us in the United States thought was possible. But along the way, I'm sure you've had some fun or shenanigans with your three-man booth mates, maybe with Rebecca, Kyle, and the two Robbies, maybe even the men in blazers. Something funny that stood out along the way?
I think it's just generally the banter. I think from day one, we've all got along like a house on fire. You know, there's a huge distance between us, but when we get together at the start of a season, you know, there are a few shenanigans. You know, Earl, he can party. You know, he can go late into the night. You know, Kyle, when you can't walk past a piano without sitting down and playing some tunes on it. Rebecca's laugh, I think, is infectious. You know, Musty just is one of the funniest blokes you'll ever meet in your life. And Graham and Lee, from the moment we walk into the Winnebago on a weekly basis, I mean, you have to come armed with your banter, because if you're weak or having a bad day, you will get killed in that Winnebago. Because the band, I mean, these guys have come through, you know, tough dressing rooms at Chelsea and at Arsenal, and they are on their game. They know what they're doing. So it's survival of the fittest. I think I've developed quite a thick skin over the last few years. But they do it, you know, with a real sense of friendship. And there's nothing, you know, it's all meant in the best possible taste and with love and friendship. But I've never laughed as much with any group of people than I do with our Saturday and Sunday afternoon team on site. They are absolutely hilarious, and they can take it as well as they can, as well as they can give it.
Well, that is the work of a consummate professional. And I think another individual that we view as a bit of a consummate professional, both as a player and now as a manager, Frank Lampard, in his first season at Chelsea. How have you felt about his transition and maybe the matches you've had a chance to call at either Stamford Bridge or watching Chelsea in person this season?
I think the most impressive performance that I saw of this latest iteration of the Chelsea team under Frank was the Spurs away game. Now, I know Chelsea have been maddeningly inconsistent this season, but they are in fourth place. And I tell you, Manchester United fans and Arsenal fans would swap in a heartbeat with what Chelsea have managed to achieve with a very young side this year. I sat down with Frank for an Inside the Mind at the start of the season. He's just an impressive guy. He gets the media. He's intelligent. Again, he's erudite. He speaks about the game with huge football IQ. There's no, you know, you can't question his career. He was an amazing footballer, and it was his dedication to his craft that shone through when he was a player. And it's likewise as a manager. Now, you know, did it need the perfect storm of circumstances for him to get the job after only 1 year as a full-time manager at Derby County? Yes, you know, the Maurizio Sarri experiment didn't quite work out. The fans were disgruntled with the style of play, but he was able to walk away under his own volition, having won a European trophy and having qualified, got to a cup final domestically and qualified for Champions League. So it's rare that a Chelsea manager walks away on their own terms, having had that sort of success, in spite of the fact that he wasn't particularly popular. Then we had the transfer ban that was subsequently lifted, but, you know, any prospective manager was faced with two transfer windows without being able to sign a player, which is, you know, that's a huge disadvantage, you know, in trying to get Champions League football and finish in the top four in a very competitive league. So in came Frank, and it was just the right thing at the right time and the right manager to bring through this plethora of exciting young players. So with young players comes a little bit of inconsistency, but I'm really impressed with the way that Frank has gone about his business. And when Chelsea click, they are fantastic. When they don't, it's maddening. At home to Bournemouth, at home to Southampton, really at home to West Ham, really bad results, and not scoring at home as well against those teams. was inexcusable in many respects. But then you do see the big performances, like the narrow defeat against Liverpool that you mentioned. You guys were there for that one. But the Spurs away, tactically, I thought was a masterclass. And he's got some very good players. And if he gets a transfer window under his belt where there's a real war chest of money to spend, I think next season is going to be very exciting for Chelsea with potentially Champions League football as well.
Well, that would be the ideal scenario. Speaking of the youth talent, obviously the likes of Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount, Fikayo Tomori, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Reece James, all of these players have made an impact for Chelsea this year. How impactful, you know, or I guess pick one. Is there one that kind of stands out to you from that class that has really stood out to you as you've been watching?
I think in the early part of the season, Tomori stood out for me. I mean, it's obvious that Mason Mount has a wonderful array of skills and passing range and an eye for a goal. Tammy Abraham has done superbly, leading the line in his first season, effectively as a Premier League footballer. Tomori, to me, looks like he's got everything for a defender. Pace, he reads the game wonderfully. He's going to be a top centre-back for both Chelsea and for England for many years to come. Who I'm really interested to watch develop and who's kind of come into the starting 11 slightly later in the season is Reece James. That man is an absolute beast. He's confident. He's self-assured. He's skillful. He's powerful. He's got everything. And maybe eventually he's a holding midfielder. It remains to be seen. But at right back at the moment, he has been absolutely superb. And he's only going to get better. So out of that very exciting group of young players that you've mentioned, and you could really make a strong case for all of them. But at the moment, I'm really enjoying watching Reece James play.
So obviously, we are wildly biased with the Christian Pulisic hype train that exists. You have a very interesting angle that you are in touch with the American audience, but obviously, you're living over in the UK. And from your perspective, what has Christian's impact been, not only on Chelsea, but maybe the Premier League and your coverage at NBC?
Well, he's obviously a player that we are delighted to have in the Premier League. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that we're going to go overboard, but naturally there's going to be an interest in arguably the greatest ever American player, although I think he has a bit of work to do. He's almost the greatest American player in waiting, but has to fulfill his potential. I think, you know, the likes of Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, Brian McBride, I think those guys, you know, had solid careers. But Christian's on his way. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the reaction on Twitter after a game is, oh, you keep going on about Christian Pulisic. I don't care about him. I'm a Liverpool fan. I'm a Man United fan, you know, living in America. Okay, that's fine. But I tell you what, there'll be kids of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 across the United States, regardless of what team they support, who are watching with bated breath at everything that Christian Pulisic does. And he is there to inspire a generation of young soccer players and soccer fans across the United States, regardless of what team they support. And naturally, I think more youngsters will gravitate towards Chelsea as a result of him being signed and playing in the first team. Now, you know, I think that's part of the strategy for Chelsea in investing the amount of money and time that they have in Christian Pulisic. I've sat down with him again for an Inside the Mind. He's a quiet guy, fairly unassuming, doesn't necessarily bask in the spotlight that's sort of shone his way. But he just wants to get on with business, and he loves the game of football. Frank, I think, put him in early in the season. Didn't quite work out. He got him on the training ground. He drilled him for a few weeks. Then he returned and he started scoring goals. And we were there at Turf Moor for the perfect hat trick as well, which was an amazing moment because it coincided with the Austin Fan Fest as well. So there were, 10,000 people watching live in Austin. And it was just, I mean, you couldn't have scripted it any better for him to start the game and score left foot, right foot, header as well. It was just brilliant. And then unfortunately, of late, he suffered from a few injuries. But, you know, Frank clearly rates him. Frank knows the pressure that's on him. He's aware of the American market. He's aware of the expectation that's on Christian. and he's going to help him through it. So I think the future for Christian at Chelsea is very, very bright.
Well, we will take that and run with it, Arlo. We are on the same page. Anyways, you've been so gracious with your time. We want to wrap up with one thing that we like to do with our guests, and that's a rapid fire section. So you don't have to spend a lot of time on these. They might be a little lighthearted, maybe not as much, but this is the last thing we've got for you today. So in the first one, in your opinion, which you can't be wrong, what is the best Premier League team ever?
Oh, that's a really good question. Okay, until the end of the season, I'm going to have to say Manchester City's Centurions.
Totally fair.
What is your favorite match that you have called for NBCSN over the years?
Chelsea 2, Spurs 2, Monday night, the Battle of Stamford Bridge. Eden Hazard curls it into the top corner. Leicester win the title. Amazing night.
Obviously, I think Liverpool is probably number one here, but the top four at the end of the season for you are going to be?
I think Liverpool will shade the title by a narrow margin of 25 points, followed by Manchester City, followed by Leicester City, followed by Chelsea.
Well, I'd take it if we could right now. How would you describe these teams with one word? The first one being Liverpool.
Dominant.
Chelsea.
Transitional.
City.
Wobbling.
Wolves.
Resurgent.
Sheffield.
Shocking.
Arsenal.
Declining.
And Leicester.
Amazing.
Ah, there it is. The bias comes out.
Yeah, that's fun.
We know that there are a ton of great minds in the Premier League right now. Which current Premier League player would you tap to be the next great Premier League manager?
Oh, what a really, really good question. Wow. Let me have a think about that. It might be somebody like Jordan Henderson. Or maybe a Virgil van Dijk. There's a lot of football intelligence in that Liverpool team. I'm trying to think somebody from Manchester City who might be able to step up. I mean, Vincent Kompany, you know, he's just gone into player management in Belgium, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe those two are the guys that spring to mind. Yeah, I'll have to stick with those for now.
So what's your favorite sport that is not soccer for us or football for you?
Well, I commentated on cricket for a long time for the BBC. It will never catch on in America. The purest form of the game can take 5 days of 8 hours a day play and can still end in a draw. So I don't think that's going to catch on in America somehow. But cricket is an amazing sport, and I have a real deep love for NFL dating back to the late 80s. And I'm a major Bears fan, and I've commentated on 5 Super Bowls as well. So I'd like to do that again in the future if I get the opportunity.
Lampard, Gerrard, or Scholes?
Oh, goodness me. Lampard.
No, no further questions asked. Yeah. We'll take it.
Yeah. He was an all-round threat, and I'm just so impressed with him as a person. And with his dedication to his craft, he's a really impressive guy.
All right, this will be good because if you spent time in Seattle, American weather or British weather?
Oh, American weather. Even Seattle weather over British weather any day of the week.
I'd like to hear that.
At least the sun shone in the summer in Seattle. Even here, I mean, it's just different levels and shades of gray cloud. And it gets you down. So we all have to get abroad at some point for a bit of vitamin D down to Spain or somewhere just to recharge ourselves.
So you mentioned your obviously love of Chicago sports. Which one of those teams, Cubs, White Sox, Bears, or Bulls, will win a title next?
Well, it won't be the White Sox. I don't know enough about basketball to say it would be the Bulls. I'm not convinced in Mitch Trubisky, unfortunately. Particularly as we could have had Patrick Mahomes in the draft, where we traded up one place, gave up a first round draft pick, but hey, you know, in Mitch we trust, etc. So I'm going to have to say the Cubs.
Cubs, okay. You lived in Seattle for a few years there. What is your favorite restaurant in Seattle for our foodie friends?
I used to love. I lived in South Lake Union. I used to love Chandler's. I was never massively into sort of exotically expensive seafood until I started doing a radio show on KJR with Mike Gastineau and in the afternoons, and he used to pay me in Chandler's vouchers, and I used to take them down there and just lavish myself with king crab and lobster, and it was absolutely amazing. On a nice day on the deck by South Lake Union, just beautiful. Great memories.
All right, last one from the rapid fire section. Overall, American food or British food?
American food every day of the week. I mean, if I literally didn't have to eat another meal over here, that would be fine by me. I mean, it has improved over the years. I'm kind of joking slightly, but there is just no substitute for American cuisine. It is absolutely sensational. And it's part of the reason why I come back every year. It's so many experiences that I love about America, but the culinary, the breadth of experiences you can have is just fantastic.
Well, awesome. I'd say you successfully navigated the rapid fire section, Arlo. Thank you. Thank you for playing the game with us.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. Anytime.
All right. Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, gentlemen, I think we've covered on pretty much everything we could today. But Arlo, thank you so much again for hanging out with us, join us on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're so excited to have you leading the broadcast, charge for us over here in America. So again, thank you. And you have so much support from the audience, not only of Chelsea, but other teams in the United States. So hopefully you can take that with you and keep up the amazing work.
Oh, guys, thank you very much. You know, it's lovely to touch base with our audience. We send our calls out into the ether across the ocean to a different continent. So it's always lovely to keep in touch and to talk to fans and viewers of what we do. So I appreciate the support very much. And if you're ever at a Chelsea game again and we're there, come and say hello. It's always a pleasure to talk to American fans. So good luck with the rest of the season, chaps. And anytime you need me, you know where I am.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Arlo. Everyone go tweet at him. Say thank you. How much you enjoy the episode. But that'll do it for us Chelsea fans. Until next time, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.